Hey everybody out there, time for another movie retrospective. I know we did a new one, kind of a new one last time because we did Train to Busan, but on this installment we are going back again to the 1970s. A very well-regarded TV movie, made for TV movie, from 1975. This is Trilogy of Terror.
Oh, Karen Bat Karen Blackfoot. She's it's like three movies. It's kind of like the prototype, kind of like a prototype for Creepshow, where
A
it's like,
little bit.
I think Creepshow might have been a little bit better, but this one's good too, though. It's good.
Yeah, I mean, considering that this was made for TV in 1975, it was actually made for ABC. It was their movie of the week. And it's kind of an unusual, it's an anthology film, obviously, and it has three different segments. It's somewhat short. I think it's only like 75 minutes. But it has kind of an unusual conceit to it, in the sense that all three segments were based on stories by Richard Matheson, and all three stories star Karen Black, like in
Karen Black.
different roles.
Sexy ass Karen Black.
There is something very like, and I don't know what it is. It's like she was, and it's funny because before she did this, I mean, she was in Five Easy Pieces, she was in Easy Rider, she was in like a lot of really big movies. And then kind of went off into horror later
She's
on.
got that Walt Disney damn nose, where the bridge of her nose goes way back in. She looks like a Walt Disney character from the side. That's part of it. She's tall and she's good looking, and she has it looks like slightly a lazy eye that kind of makes her look
Yeah, she's a
sexy.
little bit cross-eyed.
That was my dad's favorite actress.
I know, isn't that
He
funny?
loved
He
her.
told me
He, yeah, my
that
dad was just like crazy about it.
last night.
And really, what I remember about this one, because when I first saw it, I was sitting on the damn living room floor playing with trucks and shit, or UFOs probably. My dad was watching it, and it had that damn Xindi warrior, that doll,
Zuni Warrior,
Xuni warrior, little damn enchanted doll, and that's what stuck with me over the years.
I feel like
That
that
doll.
segment is pretty much the main thing that people think of when they think of this movie. I've seen it several times over the years, and I actually like all three of the stories, but I do feel like most people, I mean, pretty much 99.99% of everyone that I've ever like looked at that read that reviewed this movie is like pretty much the only the third one is any good, the one
No,
with
the
the
other ones are
Zuni
good
warrior.
too.
But yeah, I would disagree with that.
The other ones are more story based, and that last one is more kind of like action and special effects based. I mean, it's almost kind of like a prototype for Gremlins, where you got like a little creature that you got to fight against. There was an episode of The Twilight Zone that when I was a kid, that it reminded me a lot of the same one, and that was the one with the Agnes Moorehead. Plays an old woman living in a shack out in the damn desert, and a little UFO lands up into her roof, and she starts fighting these little men from space, and they're zapping her with ray guns.
Yeah, I remember that.
And then in the very end, you find out, she kills them all, and then starts busting up the damn flying saucer, and it says U.S. Air Force on the flying saucer, and you hear a transmission, this is the Mars exploration, back to Earth. Don't come to Mars; it's inhabited by giants. It's turned out she was a Martian, but you think she's just some woman in the old West,
Yeah,
But it
who
was
had like a tiny UFO land on her. I
yeah, that
can't remember what
was
the name of that episode was.
I don't know, it was a good episode, man.
It
When I was
was, that was one of the best ones.
a kid, that one just really stuck with me. That one, the idea of these little toy sized things fighting you. You know what I mean? And then the idea of this in this movie, Trilogy of Terror, something the size of a doll
They could
coming at you.
fuck you up, yeah.
Yeah, because I had little dolls like little Boba Fetts. They were like that big. I had the damn alien doll from Alien. I had Boba Fett. And it just kind of was like, man, what if that came after you?
Yeah, you'd be in
It'd be
trouble.
weird, something that small. But it kind of holds up today, that last
Is
one.
very 70s, but you know what I mean? It's like there is something about that era. And a lot of really good made-for-TV movies were made in that era. I'm not sure what was going on in the 70s, but there was a lot of like good writers working and shit like that. I mean, this was directed by Dan Curtis, who obviously probably most famous for Dark Shadows. He also directed Burnt Offerings. He did Kolchak the Night Stalker. He did that 1974 Dracula, the one, I think that was the one that had Jack Palance in it.
Yeah.
Yeah, he directed that as well.
Yeah.
And as I said, the three segments of this were based on Richard Matheson stories. Yeah. Now, the third one with the Zuni warrior, the segment's called Amelia, even though the story that it's based on is actually called Prey.
Yeah.
But Richard Matheson actually wrote the teleplay for that one as well. But even though the other two were based on his stories, the guy that did the teleplay for those was William F. Nolan, who actually wrote the novel Logan's Run.
Yeah, okay.
So, you know, and he wrote the screenplay for Burnt Offerings also.
Yeah, it's good. It's a good flick. And you can see it for free on YouTube.
Yeah.
It's up there. So, you know, I don't want to spoil everything about each little tale, because a lot of people haven't seen this, especially younger people. They've never seen this one, Trilogy of Terror.
Yeah.
So, you know what I mean? The first story is about a woman who's a school teacher, and she's real kind of uptight and proper and prim.
Yeah, she's got the glasses and the bun and everything like that.
And she's teaching in a college.
Yeah, she's like an English teacher.
Yeah, and one of the college kids, you know, he's like this fucking dick slinger. All he does is just knock down women.
Chad McDate Rape, as I call him.
Chad McDate Rape. And he's checking around. He's going like, I wonder what she looks like with those clothes off. And he's saying it to his buddies. So he hatches this plan to get it, and then to abuse it. Yeah, it's pretty. Yeah,
in some pretty horrible ways.
Yeah, I don't know if I should spoil everything about that one, but
yeah, because pretty much all of them. I don't know if you'd call this a warrior, but they kind of have twist endings.
They all have twist endings. Then the second one is about these two sisters. This woman who's having a problem. She's like in the same kind of deal, like a prim proper chick living in this mansion. And she keeps having a problem with her slutty ass sister. And they do different things. And then you find out real quick, real soon, that, you know, you can obviously tell what's going on. Is that they're the same woman that she's got.
Yeah.
She's got split personality disorder.
That's not really spoiling it, because
it's not really spoiling it.
I mean, the thing is, it's like, that might have been like more of a surprise back in 1975, but it's been done to death like so many times since then that it's like, you will be able to, it's telegraphed like a mile away.
They telegraphed that shit a mile away.
The ending of the first one, I'm not sure. Actually, I think the first time I saw that movie, I didn't know how the end was going to go.
I didn't see that one coming.
I didn't see that coming.
Yeah, I didn't see it
like how the twist of that
one. And then the last one's more kind of like an action segment, so there isn't really any story to it, other than that this girl keeps getting pestered by her mom.
Yeah, interestingly, the last segment is almost like a one-woman play.
Yeah.
Because you don't see anyone else. She's just in her apartment, and she talks to her mom on the phone, and she talks to her boyfriend on the phone, but there's nobody else. You don't see anybody else in the in the apartment.
Well, she's got this damn African doll. It's kind of like supposed to be a... It looks like a warrior. It's got a bunch of teeth on it, an elongated head, real demonic looking, and crazy hair, and a spear. And big
He's
old
super
sharp,
cute, I think.
Sharp teeth and big old angry eyes. And it supposedly has a damn soul of a person trapped in it.
Yeah. He who kills.
Yeah, yeah. He who kills. So it's, you know, I guess she explains it in the movie. I guess, you know, you get an evil person soul can be captured, and it gets imprisoned inside this old doll. And she doesn't believe it, I don't think.
Well, she just bought it at a curio shop for her boyfriend because he's an anthropologist, and I guess that's kind of his bag, so she, like, bought it for him for his birthday. That's how she ends up.
Yeah, well, this thing comes to life, and I don't really know why it came to life. I don't remember if that was...
Well, his little... remember that little gold chain?
That's right. It had a necklace
on it. And it even said, hey, keep that gold chain on there, because that's what's keeping the warrior soul in there.
That's right. I forgot.
And it fell off. Like, it broke.
I forgot that detail.
While she was, like, in the kitchen cooking or something like that. And then she comes back in, and he's not on the coffee table anymore.
In that last story, she's being hunted down by this little damn doll. And most of the time, it's just in the camera going...
I know, he makes the greatest noise. Right?
Yeah, it's making all these weird noises and shit. It's trying to bite. It's got knives, and she's trying to outsmart it. And it's out. So there's a big cat and mouse game inside her house. It's getting full-size knives. It's stabbing her with a damn...
It's like stabbing her little ankles and stuff like that. It's like, it's just
she tries to drown it in a bathtub.
Yeah, she tries to put it in a suitcase. Yeah, like, slap it in a suitcase and shit like that.
So all kinds of stuff happens.
It's just, yeah, it's, I have to say that for 1975.
That was the best one.
It actually, well, I think everybody says that.
Yeah.
And I would agree with that also.
Well, it's the most memorable.
Yeah. So, I mean, yeah. For 1975, the little Zuni warrior, like, looks good. I mean, you know,
it's coming up out of the bathtub.
You can tell, like, with editing, it was probably like a puppet and stuff like that. But it's like it looked really good.
It looked
really
good.
Nice to see some stuff without.
With the editing and it, they didn't show it for, they didn't show it moving. You know, it was really they didn't show it moving in long shots. They're real quick takes.
Yeah,
I think the longest they ever showed it moving really was coming up out of the bathtub, wasn't it?
Yeah, that was.
And it looked like
it
was crawling up out of the bathtub.
Yeah. Which I actually really liked that.
So shot. They must have had some really, really thin, solid wires, kind of like you do doing the arms and the legs.
Yeah, I was thinking maybe it was a hand puppet, but I think his little arms were too skinny.
Yeah,
be a hand puppet.
Yeah,
it didn't really look like a hand.
I think
puppet.
It was kind of more
like
a
marionette,
more like a marionette on rods, really, really skinny.
That's
rods.
Probably what it was.
Something that wouldn't show up on film.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I think that's like, I mean, everybody points to that last segment, you know, just because the Zuni, like, little warrior is, like, so scary, like, his little face is scary. And also, it's a really good, like, buildup of tension.
Yeah.
Like, she's just on there on the phone, there's this little doll and everything, and then she's, like, she has this conversation with her mom and all this other kind of stuff, so there's that kind of tension there. And then, you know, when she's in the kitchen... And then she kind of hears something, and she looks, and there's just this little bitty shadow that goes by. So it's, like, really good at, like, building up, like, suspense and not really showing the little guy, like, as he's kind of, like, running around.
It's about, like, a good Twilight Zone episode.
Yeah, that's pretty much what, like, a lot of these are like. As I said, I think probably, I mean, the third one's obviously the best one. That's the one everybody remembers. I think probably the first one, which is called Julie, about the teacher that gets blackmailed into a sexual, weird sexual thing.
Yeah.
With fucking Chad.
Yeah.
Chad McDateridge.
Chad enslaves her and shit.
Like I said, it does have a twist ending, which I probably won't spoil. Oh, I did want to say that, at one point in that segment, because I had to look this up because I wasn't sure, where they go to a drive-in theater, like the drive-in theater where he like drugs or drink and shit. So he was like making this big deal about, oh, there's this like arty French vampire movie like playing at the drive-in or whatever. So I'm watching it, and I'm like, God, that looks so familiar. So I looked up what it was. It's Kolchak the Night Stalker, which is another one of Dan Curtis's movies, but it was the French dub of it.
All right.
So he was, like, making fun of his own movies because the guy at one point was saying something like, man, I thought it's so boring. You know what I mean? So I thought that was, like, a really cute, like, in-joke that they put in there that was, like, one of his other movies.
Because they show the movie real quick.
Yeah, and like I said, I've seen Kolchak the Night Stalker. He made another one, too, Kolchak the Night Strangler, I guess. It was like, but he did one about, like, I think that one was about a werewolf, but the Night Stalker was about vampire. But, so, you know, this is definitely, keep in mind that it's, you know, the 1970s and shit like that. But, man,
and it's TV.
Yeah, I mean, if
but
you
it's
like.
It's pretty racy for TV.
It is, actually.
Well,
a lot of it, I mean, obviously they had to, like, suggest, a lot of it's very suggestive.
Yeah, but you know what I'm talking about.
But, you know, I mean, anybody would know what they were talking about, particularly in the first one, because I assumed that that's what you were talking about. Now, the interesting thing about this, too, is that, I was going to say that a lot of the, in the last segment with the Zuni Warrior, like, where Karen Black is, like, talking on the phone and shit like that, most of that was improvised. Also... the very famous last shot of that segment with Karen Black's face and shit like that, which, you know, it's hard to say, like, oh, I can't spoil it because that's the picture that's, like, on the front of the new Blu-ray, I think, so it's not, you're not really, like, spoiling anything. But I think, according to her, that was her idea as well.
To do that. Yeah.
And it's funny because, ironically, she did not want to do this movie at first because she was afraid of getting typecast, which... Actually, she kind of did, because after she did this, then she was doing, like, Burnt Offerings, and then she ended up, you know, and then much later, she got to, you know, she kind of went more into a horror thing, which I'm not really sure, because previous to that, she'd been in, like I said, like, really big, like, really big Hollywood movies, like Easy Rider and stuff like that, so
I think
she was kind of upset that she got typecast into horror films.
Yeah, she was just lucky to continue working, though, because think about it, you know, most actresses... And actors just kind of vanish after a movie or two.
That's true.
She got to do movies her whole life. Maybe kind of being forced into the horror role might have been promoted the longevity of her career. Because, you know, ladies don't last long.
They really don't. No. And it's like, and I mean, she was shit. She was even in the fucking Rob Zombie movies and shit like that. So, like, later on. Yep. And the thing about it is that, you know, I it's hard for me to say because I love horror movies. But I know that there are some actors that it's like, oh, they don't want to do horror because it's like, you know, then that's all they'll be in is horror movies and shit like that. But I have to say, one, like I said, it's probably regular work, maybe more than other genres.
Right.
Two, it might not be as, like, glamorous or
I don't think it's as lucrative
either. As lucrative or as famous or anything like that. But I tell you what, like, horror fans are really loyal. And if you, like, get a kind of a niche like Karen Black had, where she's kind of like, you know, a scream queen type of woman, or she was in, like, a lot of kind of cult horror movies, it's like you will have a built-in audience forever.
Yeah.
It's like, you know what I mean? Like, even, like, younger people will know your shit.
Yeah. And so, that doesn't happen if you're a leading lady.
No, not really. It's like, there's very few genres where that happens.
Yeah.
So it's like if I was an actor and people were like, you know, if you got typecast into fucking horror, I'd be like, good. Right. You know, you might not make $1 zillion, but
at least you'll be remembered.
At least you'll be remembered and like you'll have a lot of fans like forever and
be
shit
doing
like
conventions
that.
For the rest of your life.
Yeah, it's like, you know what I mean? There's no shame in that. And it's like, you know, you have all these people come here that love
you. Well,
they
want that
like
big score, you know what I mean? They want that $50 million hit, you know?
I know that, but you know what I mean. Now, I wanted to talk about, too, when I didn't even know this until today, but in 1996, there was a made-for-TV sequel to Trilogy of Terror, Trilogy of Terror 2.
Okay.
And it was also directed by Dan Curtis. And I thought this was kind of interesting because it's also on YouTube for free because I found it and I said, oh, I'll watch it today just, you know, before we record this. It had the same kind of thing. It was three stories. It was a different actress, obviously. It was Lisette Anthony, who I knew from the Dark Shadows reboot that happened in the 90s. So she was in all three, like playing different characters. Now, this one had the first story, I think, was actually the best one, The Graveyard Rats. And that was a William F. Nolan story. Like I said, he's the guy that wrote Logan's Run. Now, the second segment was Bobby, which was based on a story by Richard Matheson. And I'm watching it going, God damn, this story is so familiar. They've made this into a movie before. And sure enough, in 1977, Dan Curtis had made another anthology film called Dead of Night. Oh, my goodness. That was
Cat.
That was Baby Cookie.
Yeah.
He had made another one called Dead of Night that also had Bobby in it, and it was almost exactly the same, so I thought that was very odd. And then the third segment of the sequel was actually called He Who Kills, and it was basically a direct sequel of Amelia/Prey from the first movie,
with the zoning.
Where it's like, yeah, so basically it was just like it picked up where the ambulance and the cops and Karen Black's boyfriend were coming to the apartment and finding her and her dead mom in the apartment after the Zuni doll had killed them.
All right.
And then they find the little baked Zuni doll in the oven and they take it to Lisette Anthony's character, who's like some kind of like forensic something or other. And, you know, it was like almost exactly the same. Like
was
she
it good?
Did like, yeah, it was pretty good, but she did like exactly the same shit that Karen Black, she put it in a box and then she tried to drown him and then she did all this stuff. So it's like, and the ending was like pretty much exactly the same. So I thought it was kind of, I mean, it was kind of neat, like to see the little Zuni doll again and everything, but I just, I thought
they should have done more with it.
Yeah. I thought they could have like expanded out a little bit because it was basically like the exact same story, just like in a difference. It was like in a lab setting instead of an apartment. So with a different actor. So I thought
that people wanted more.
And it killed like a couple other people too.
Yeah. People wanted more.
I guess so.
Just give them more of that.
But, other than that, like I said, the Graveyard Rats was actually my favorite, segment. I liked the Bobby segment too, but it's just like, I couldn't get into it because I'd already seen it done before in Dead of Night. And it was pretty much identical.
Yeah.
So, you know. But it's a perfectly good movie in its own right. And like I said, it is also free on YouTube. If you want to check them out, check them both out. Have a double feature. It's super fun. Because, man, I love anthology movies.
Yeah.
But, yeah. So, Trilogy of Terror. The wonderful Karen Black, who sadly passed away many years ago. She died in 2013.
She did?
2014. Okay. Yeah, cancer.
Okay.
So that was kind of a shame. But yes, and I know I've probably recommended this before, but if you like Karen Black, go see another TV movie called The Strange Possession of Mrs. Oliver. That is also on YouTube. I think it might be the same channel that has that other one, but that's like really, really good. And actually, it kind of reminds me of the middle segment of Trilogy of Terror, like the Millicent and Therese, I think that's called. It's kind of a similar thing to that, which is...
She was good in that Rob Zombie movie, too.
I have to say, I really did like her. I was very excited.
Was she just one of those, or she was in both
I remember, well...
I think she was just in one of those.
Shit, I don't even remember. I remember she was in the first one. I don't even remember if she was in the second one or not. It's been so long since I've seen them. But yeah. All right, so Trilogy of Terror, go check them out. That'll, and we'll see you next time. Bye.